Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show. It's Saturday, November 13th, 2010. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. And in the course of the next hour, we're going to be discussing what you might best call the personage who is a puppet elect to the Senate from Kentucky, Rand Paul, the phenomenon, the person, the pedigree, the etiology kind of a disease. And what really we must do in this country right now to flank the bastards, as Mr. Lyndon LaRouche said, it's part of our job to flank these bastards and get the emergency action we need. Now, before I go into that more and introduce the people and the topics, I do want to welcome our guests. And we have Alan Agri. Welcome, Alan.
Hello.
Who is speaking to us from Chicago. Alan, for some years, has been very active with the Great Lakes, in the Great Lakes region of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, with the LaRouche Youth Movement. And Alan is, I may have been repeating myself, but he is speaking to us now from Chicago. And also, I'm very glad to have here live in the studio with me, Anton Chaykin. Welcome, Tony.
Hi.
And it has been a while. Tony, who is with Executive Intelligence Review, of course, as well as the LaRouche Political Action Committee, our historian at the EIR. And I'll be repeating this later, but he is part of the team that years ago wrote the book, Dope Incorporated. And
the better parts of it.
And that is back in print, but don't wait around. Go on to the website where you might be listening live now or on archive, which is LaRouchePub.com. You can order it that way. You can call the relevant number there or just order online. But be sure and do that. And that really, in terms, that's very relevant to what we're dealing with today. You have to know your enemy. And then you have to be able to, namely, be able to differentiate if he's in camouflage. And because what we've got here is, you know, it's only been about 11 or 12 days since the election, which wasn't an event in itself, but part of a process in our country, in the United States, where in the mass mood of repugnance, which is a very good thing, against Obama remaining in the White House and being the puppet of London policies against our nation, policies which we can get into that are antithetical, that are completely in opposition to our heritage, the American system, that really want to kill people at this time of the world economy, monetarist system internationally blowing out. People voted for the other guy in many cases, and we've got some obscenities lined up to be sworn into office, one of which is the fellow in Kentucky named Rand Paul, who we're going to be discussing. And I want to make sure people know, I underscore again, last Saturday on our weekly show, we didn't have one. We recommended people listen to the webcast given internationally based out of Washington by Lyndon LaRouche. And so be sure and see that or read the transcript. It's available. And I want to tell people that now, as of this past week, Mr. LaRouche is finishing a paper he calls Fascism Came to the Election. It has some other subtitles and longer names, but that will be done in the next few days. And so, as I say, here we are. People are now reeling from the effects of the chain reactions of economic breakdown taking place in their lives, their communities, states, and localities around the country. And they're also reeling from the effects of realizing the what they've done and gone, who they might have elected, what's going on here, what kind of is there a real alternative to Obama lined up, or is it the same thing? Well, namely, it's the same thing. I just want to throw in one thing here. You know, Obama's still on tour. He'll be back, I think, in Washington, D.C. on Sunday, the 14th or so. But from Japan this morning, he said yet again that the world is in a recovery. The United States is in a recovery. He had a pre-taped weekly program this morning, the weekly radio show from the White House. And he said, what we have to do is work together with Republican and Democrat alike to end overspending like earmarks. And Tony, I'm sure, is going to tear this apart, but this just underscores the job that we have to do. We citizens, we patriots in the country, it's not Republican or Democrat right now, to get Obama out of office, to make clear what the stripe, what the pedigree is of someone like Rand Paul, and create the conditions where we have the emergency measures, a financial reorganization, so we can have the credit and start the projects like the North American Water and Power Alliance on this continent that's going to start to rebuild the world. So this is a question. I'm not going to try and summarize some of LaRouche's his webcast or his papers, but look at one called Einstein Viewed Kepler that's posted on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, and our weekly Executive Intelligence Review carries it as a feature. People have to understand what the universe is about. There is principle in the universe. It isn't just anything goes, you hope for the best, and that's where you get in to vote for the other guy. But there's a real creative principle of creativity, the ability to discover and know how to judge, to do the best you can, the right thing, instead of what you can call it many names, liberalism. I said anything goes, and that's the problem we're in right now. Without me giving more introduction, what we'd like to do is start from the Midwestern states and Alan Agree. Do you want to sum up or describe, characterize the mood of people or the situation we're in right now in the country regarding the emergency situation and the question of leadership? Go ahead.
In Chicago here, we've been organizing downtown more often now that there's been a real, let go from the population of Obama, that people aren't, so, euphoric about Obama anymore. And that was clear when we last week we actually set up one of our banners in front of the municipal building in Chicago, where you had people coming down, totally changed from even a few months ago when we were organizing downtown, saying that this is really effective. You guys are really having a huge effect on the population here. Just people just recognizing that we've been calling this guy out for over a year now with the Hitler mustache, and people are really responding to this. And now to today, when we went out, you also have after that was pre-election. Now after the election, you've had people now realizing that people like Rand Paul and all these guys are not a big difference from Obama. And they're still suffering from the cuts, the budget cuts. Like we talked to a fireman today. He actually said that this is, nothing's changed. These guys are still going for massive budget cuts, and I'm totally on board with this. You also had a woman who worked in medical, clerical position. She's been unemployed for a couple years now, and this she said that this I can't find any work at all. So you have a real recognition that this budget cutting is just going to continue, and people know it in the population. There isn't like Lynn said, there's only a millimeter thick deep of support for Rand Paul. All the people that were against Obama that we were talking to early before the elections, they don't particularly like Rand Paul. He's not their representative. And we've also, the only people that really view him as their representative have been the leadership of some of these Tea Party organizations who are freaking out that, Obama called out Rand Paul in the webcast last week. So the sentiment in the population that
Oh, yeah, you meant LaRouche on the webcast. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
LaRouche,
Yeah, no, sure. Go ahead.
yeah, LaRouche, yeah. And so, yeah, so the whole idea is that that now you have a real reaction in the population to this factor of Rand Paul, and people know that this is just the same thing that Obama represents, this massive budget cutting, that they're not seeing any real change.
Right. Well, Tony, you have the same experience when it comes to some of the people who might consider them as Tea Party leaders or the radio hosts or, you know what I mean? They're the ones that are freaking out when you tell the truth that Rand Paul and Obama have the same policies.
Right. I had a very intense experience yesterday. I was on Jack Blood's radio interview, and he began screaming and going hysterical when I pointed out very calmly that Rand Paul, having been elected supposedly to oppose Obama's killing off of the American population, has allied himself to Obama to kill Americans, not only to Obama, but to George Soros on things like dope. And I very specifically pointed to a radio interview that, or TV interview that Rand Paul had a week ago, saying that he recommended the point of view of Chris Edwards at Cato Institute. That's an agency of the Austrian school, and we'll get to that. But Rand Paul said, you have to listen to this guy. He knows what we have to do. And Chris Edwards had recommended destroying NASA space program, destroying Medicare, destroying Social Security, and implementing the green agenda to stop the development of modern technology. So when I brought this up, that Rand Paul is simply a demagogue working for the global money power, and that he has allied himself, contrary to the public's wishes, with Obama, who's out to kill them, this radio host went insane, and he was shouting and screaming to prevent a reasoned and patient analysis of what the situation is that we face in this collapse, and with demagogues like Rand Paul running around.
Well, so Tony, maybe you want to, and Alan, you could chime in too, but I'm asking Tony here, do you want to identify, most of the people who will be listening will know some of the exact same policies, like you said, kill NASA, cut Medicare. In fact, I think Rand Paul or this Chris Edwards or Cato or something wants to get rid of the Army Corps of Engineers. I mean, talk about demagoguery. This is really wild. But do you want to identify some of that?
I think to get a clear picture of what we're facing, you have to go to the level of the brainwashers, the people manipulating Rand Paul as he manipulates the population for them.
In other words, who's packaging this stuff?
Yeah, he's like a performer who's doing a job on behalf of people that are brainwashing him, and he in turn passes that brainwashing on to the public. This is the so-called Austrian school.
Okay.
Now, this is a grouping or tendency, not a school or college, a tendency among economists that was set up between the Austrian Empire, Habsburgs, the Habsburg family, and the British Empire in the late 19th century. And it was designed to counter the influence of America in the world and to try to destroy our republic. They deny that we live for a higher purpose, that human beings live for a higher purpose. And this is the traditional British focus on pain and pleasure as the only elements in economics. But our nation has a real historical mission, and that mission to uplift, to raise the people into power, industrial power, political power, and cultural power, that mission was at the time of Lincoln and some leaders after that, was reaching out to all the nations of the world, particularly inside Europe, when this so-called Austrian school was created to destroy us and abort that mission. So you have to see that this is the money power. In other words, at the time Who are the Habsburgs? They are the rulers of a Central European empire that propped up the most Dark Ages elements within the Catholic Church, ruled the Church for a great deal of time, and actually brought the Inquisition in Americans rebelled against in forming our country. But beyond that, we had in the 19th century, in reaction to the American success at building infrastructure, at using protectionist government to build in steel mills, raising the living standards, and then we were spreading that to Germany, to Italy, to Ireland, to Japan, to Russia. In reaction to that, the enemy took essentially two steps. One step is to create a new liberalism beyond just the use of force in politics. And this had this was counter to the American ideals. This liberalism from Austria is generally described as pessimism. They introduced ugliness in art, ugliness in music, atonalism, trying to destroy the legacy of Beethoven. They introduced soulless psychology with Carl Jung and Freudian and other elements, specifically against the higher concepts of the Renaissance. And this Austrian school of economics proclaimed that liberty or freedom is simply the freedom of people to do with their money whatever they want. There's no higher purpose. And this is intended to mask the most obvious strategic point that when they started this in 1870s and 80s, they were then, with the British, creating what we now identify as the world empire of the money power, particularly based in London and with the axis running into Wall Street. For example, the Austrian Empire, the Habsburg-run Austrian Empire, was completely intermarried with the Belgian royal family and with the British royal family through the Belgians. This is a three-way monarch family. And they were starting up at just that time a whole new set of imperial experiments, nightmare experiments. This grouping was running, for example, the Opium Wars in the second round of Opium Wars in China. They sent Maximilian, the son of the emperor, over to Mexico after he had been viceroy of Venice and learned some of their methods. The British invaded Mexico during our Civil War, tried to impose him as an emperor in Mexico, while the British invaded Canada to put a pinchers on us. They set up a new hell in Central Africa called the Congo, which became the personal private property of King Leopold II of Belgium. This was the real emblem in the 19th and early 20th centuries of mass slaughter of Africans and of colonial subjects. The book Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad goes into this. They killed 20% of the people there to loot the minerals and so forth. But this gets us to the Austrian school. What is the Austrian school? In 1876, in response to the American breakout in developing our industry post-Lincoln, the Emperor of Austria, Franz Joseph, assigned a writer and political hack named Karl Menger, M-E-N-G-E-R, assigned him to be the tutor of Crown Prince Rudolf. And over the next few years, Menger took Crown Prince Rudolf of the Habsburg family around Europe and tried to explain to him the American menace in the world. Bismarck had just adopted the Americans, or was in that period, right then, adopting the American system, protectionism, government interference against international trade cartels, government payment to build railroads like Lincoln did, against the money power of Britain and the continental bankers that were propping up these monarchs. And so he explained, you have to have a new kind of liberalism to combat this. By 1881, which is 5 years later, Crown Prince Rudolf married the daughter of Leopold of Belgium, so that he became the heir of the Congo. And you have the Rothschilds and the Barings and other bankers that are propping these people up, moving into Africa, moving into other parts of the world, as they had been in China, looting and debauching and destroying. Look today at the American mission today. We are in the middle of a collapse, a fundamental collapse of that empire that I'm talking about, the money power empire. And what Lyndon LaRouche is proposing is, which he has proposed since we started this movement in 1966, that we must take the power over world affairs away from that empire, away from the London Wall Street axis. Now it's a matter of life or death. So we're proposing to put the Glass-Steagall Act in, put a firewall in the banking system, let Wall Street collapse without harming our banks, and go ahead with full-scale infrastructure development to save our people, bail out the states and cities so that people aren't killed, save Social Security and so forth, build up wages with higher industry. What does Rand Paul propose? He comes in and he says that we need to cut Social Security. The people sponsoring him and the entourage appeals to the psychology of fear by saying, yes, we have a collapse. You can't really do anything about the money power. They're all powerful. So you should try to pleasure yourself with gold or with some private pistols and guns. Or better yet, why don't we start a movement to demand that other people besides us get killed off by the government? Poor people, for example, or black people, or whatever. So we'll eliminate, or elderly. Maybe we don't need our parents. Get rid of them. Obama proposed, putting rationing on medical care.
Yeah,
by the government.
Why should elderly people have hip replacements?
Yeah, and Obama promised this the insurance company. I remember how this started. He promised the insurance companies he would cut $2 trillion out of medical care by killing off the elderly, essentially. That was Orszag's program. What was Orszag's other program that he's famous for? The budget director for Obama, get rid of Social Security. So here comes along Rand Paul, when the public is disgusted with Obama killing grandmother, and Rand Paul says, I'm going to kill grandmother by taking away her Social Security. I'm going to kill grandmother by making sure that nobody has a job in the country and can support her and keep her alive. So this is a death-dealing man. And then you have another way to pleasure yourself for the populists, for this type of populist, the Cato, the libertarian Austrian school people, is to say, take dope. It's your right. And therefore, it is the right of the oligarchs, the bankers, to pour dope into our country, as they did to China, as they are doing to pay the terrorists in Afghanistan. Finally, let me mention this. This is all based on systematic lying. The first lie is to deny that we're up against an oligarchy, that we're up against an empire. And if you deny that, then you can never solve the foreign wars that Rand Paul or other people like that claim they're against. The principle of terrorists being sponsored by this oligarchy goes back to what would happen in Italy back in the time they set up this Austrian school. It's a very simple case. Italy was a bunch of small principalities, and there was a wonderful American allied man named Emilio Cavour, C-A-V-O-U-R, who unified Italy just at the time that Lincoln became president. The Austrians were in a war to stop him. They tortured people. They executed thousands of Italians to try to keep the rule of their empire over these Italian states. At the same time, the British had terrorists operating in Italy under the leadership of Mazzini, who lived in London. And they sent these terrorists out all over Europe. This is the two-fisted approach of the money power, of the imperialists, to try to stop the emergence of nation states that can protect their people. Every form of terrorism in the world today is of that covert operations type. There is no such thing as independent terrorists. If you want to dry out the terrorists, bring modern times to these areas and resume America's business of uplifting the world.
Right. Well, this gives the long historical sweep to the fact of the anti-nation state, the origins of some of these sloganeering things that this Rand Paul says and other people do. Alan, you mentioned about the firemen's response, for example, this morning in Chicago, where people do have more than a sixth sense that things are worsening by the day, by the hour. And could you say more about that, including you've personally been operating interstate, right?
Yeah, and,
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've been going up to Wisconsin earlier this week, and then we went to a couple of interviews with other people that have been involved with the physical economic breakdown, machine tool shop and the agricultural department in Wisconsin. And just really the factor of the complete physical breakdown people know this is ongoing, and they know they really do have a sense that it's not like the people that came in were any better at all. And there is this kind of like let's wait and see what happens type of attitude, but amongst the people that are actually a part of the physical economic collapse, they're the ones saying, well, look, these guys aren't acting fast enough at all. There's really no, I mean, we're witnessing this breakdown as it happens. And, we're seeing the unemployment. We know people are unemployed right now. And what, you know, Rand Paul or Obama are promoting is not, it's actually the complete opposite of what they voted the opposition in for.
Right. Let me ask you one specific thing on, among all of the lies, one of the big ones is you have to cut the deficit, right? Mm-hmm. That it's all debt. Do you have any special people respond specially to hearing that all the time? They've even retraded Newt Gingrich to come to be played on the media, controlled media every day.
Yeah. Well, when you ask them, well, what do you think? If the people that have said that we want to cut spending, the ones that, you know, are saying we have to stop spending, well, what do you say? Well, you ask them, what do you want to cut spending on? Do you want to cut spending on, you know, the vital things that keep your city afloat, like your fire, police, any of these things? You want to allow those things to go to the wasteland, or cut this bailout, which most people don't want to cut police and fire. They'd rather reverse this bailout. They don't. You know, they're realizing that this is what the big reason why they're cutting things from the municipalities is, and they know that none of the, like Rand Paul isn't attacking the bailout.
Yeah, I'd like to get into the method, the sophistry inside this that is presented through Rand Paul by people like the late unlamented Friedrich von Hayek, who came from Austria to spread the garbage of Menger from out of the late crypts of the Austrian Empire. He went to the University of Chicago. Hayek came there after World War II. They had published his horrible book, The Road to Serfdom, where he calls for a world empire of really a world police force to stop nations from interfering with free trade. That's in his book published at the University of Chicago. But he set up at that same time the bankers group called the Mont Pelerin Society. Hmm. And this outlook at the University of Chicago, it's not all from Hayek, but it's all from that group of bankers. That is the That is the spirit, the satanic spirit, that governs Barack Obama's policy. That's what he, it's right from that University of Chicago gang of anti-American. This is a foreign enemy of the United States, and this is the same thing that Rand Paul subscribes to. Now let's look at his proposal. He says, Hayek says, that we are in favor of private property, and the state wants to take away your private property. What does he mean by private property? Well, there's a fun little historical fact that when that ship sailed into Boston Harbor and the colonists in rebellion took the tea off of there and threw it in the harbor, that tea and that ship belonged to the East India Company. And if you are not at war with that global empire represented by the East India Company, then you are, as Rand Paul is trying to do, you're trying to put the tea back into that East India Company ship and reverse the Tea Party. But what do we mean by private property? According to somebody like Hayek, private property means that small cliques of bankers and former landed aristocrats who are now in the modern world bankers or military men or priests or whatever, but in a clique like the British Privy Council, this money power, that they have the property of a whole other country, like India, like the Congo, or like the United States of America. That's their private property to determine our policies. In fact, actual private property is largely an American invention. That is, private property in the modern sense. We believe in private farms, family farms. We believed in family businesses. We believe in skilled workers.
Like machine shops like in Wisconsin, right?
Exactly right. And we want to have these things so that we have a skilled, scientific, educated, and cultured and informed population that can stand up against these foreign enemies that we're talking about. How did these forms of private property come into existence? Here, there were no such things as family farms in most of Europe. You had estates of the landed aristocracy, and most people were ignorant peasants and fools who came home
serfs,
at night,
yeah.
and serfs, and they came home at night and beat their wives and drank themselves into a stupor and went off, took their children off in the morning to work throughout the day. That is not what we have. We have private property because it serves our purpose of uplifting mankind. That's our purpose. So this is the great lie of Hayek. And how did we develop this? We developed this with infrastructure, with large, effective infrastructure like railroads and canals, always built at government expense, always as a national program, whether it was officially federal or some other thing, but it was always at government expense. We also did this by protectionism, where our right to have manufacturing was successful because our federal government stopped the import of cheap products that were dumped here by the British, sometimes when they did it losing money only to try to crush our infant industries. So the big lie of Hayek is to try to, from the standpoint of an undead feudal banker aristocrat, to come here from another country and tell Americans that private property really means that Americans do not have the right to control their own government and to use the government against that money power. That's the essential argument here. And this is why when Rand Paul, for example, says he's against the Federal Reserve, fine. What was the Federal Reserve? It was the private preserve of the money power against what? Against the power of the government, at best with a national bank, to direct the credit of our country. Who's going to direct the investments? The government doesn't have to tell you in detail what to invest in, but they have to promote the direction of the investment into infrastructure, industry, farming, science, and so forth, or you can rest assured that the economy will be destroyed by the money power sucking out all of the money, all the credit, to put it into speculation and war and devastation. Those are the only two choices. There's not the choice of saying, we'll leave it to every man to make the economic decisions about what's going to be invested in. That's a crock. That's completely out of history. The name Austrian School, this is another fun fact. The Austrian School, that name, was a term said in derisive laughter by Germans in the era of Bismarck, when the fools who copied Menger were saying that it's self-evident that only individuals and bankers have rights, nations have no rights, and without referring to any history at all. I mean, here's the history right in front of them, that in fact Americans, who had the most rights of all in the world, established those rights by building a powerful nation. If they didn't have the powerful nation with powerful industry and a powerful government, they would have had no rights at all. They would have been slaves and serfs in places like Europe or India or China or anywhere else that was under the rule of this empire. So that's the fact of history. And the whole idea of the Austrian school and the British Austrian alliance that established it is that they deny history entirely.
Right, and they set up, one thing is just, they set up a lot of franchises, I guess you could say, over the last 100 years or so.
Important.
And you mentioned University of Chicago, Friedrich von Hayek. In other words, and you had mentioned at the beginning, the Cato Institute, Rand Paul was referring.
Freedom Works.
Freedom Works. Okay, so they've set these up, in fact, all around the world in the last 50 years, right?
Yes.
Do you want to just mention a couple?
Yeah, there's the Adam... What's the name of this institute in England? It's the Central Hayekian Mont Pelerin.
I don't know. There's Atlas or Adam Smith.
Yeah, that's it. The Atlas, not Adam. The Atlas Foundation in England, and they sponsor various other think tanks and foundations to spread this poison, this foreign enemy poison, into the U.S. into all throughout the world. The Cato Institute, which talks a good game about liberty, says that the proper way of dealing with things like Social Security is to crush it like the dictator Pinochet crushed it down in Chile. And the fact is, as Keynes and all these people recognize, that their form of economics, which is to deny the right of a nation to rise, which is to give the right of the money power to do anything, to hold mankind at their pleasure and crush us, that this form of economics can only really be imposed by totally disorganizing a country, demoralizing a country, or imposed by force, as Hitler did. And that's why the Hitler mustache really depends, belongs on both Obama and Rand Paul, whose principles are Satan's principles from this European foreign enemy.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask one thing about, or Alan, let me ask you this, because Tony certainly sketched out this, you know, a lot about, too, how this whole, this ideology has been packaged, pushed. You hear it, Newt Gingrich, remember, he had Contract on America, and today there's, and you all have known there's been different elements, the Dick Armey element, you know, he can't do anything, but he's been part of interventions in the mass strike resistance of the United States to kind of derail and confuse and demoralize. But one thing is there's a deep kind of American system impulse, maybe you could say a reflex reaction, when you raise to people again, you're seeing this a lot on the LaRouche Political Action Committee video interviews, but You said you've been going to Wisconsin and elsewhere. When you say, why shouldn't we be building our way out of this? Let's go back. We don't have to. This none of this has to be. We can reorganize. And so, in many times, people can be brought around to see what rotten evil is trying to be foisted on our nation by this route of responding to what we could do. What do you say about that, Alan?
Well, what some of these interviews, like the one at the machine tool shop, specifically, there was more part of the interview. Like he talked, Terry, he actually brings up this question that, look, the productive sector has just been totally dismantled and shipped out all over the world, South America, wherever. That used to be that culture of development used to be in the area where he was, but it's now no longer exists. He said, well, the basis of my development was that you actually had a productive culture, that I was, you had industrial arts in the school system. You had actual, a real sense of physical production coming, all throughout his life. And when you look at, the only people that right now would support a Rand Paul are doped up libertarians who really have no sense of production at all. So that, that's really, what's happening to these universities. I know I witnessed it, a couple years back when we were intervening on the Ayn Rand Institute, and their proteges at the University of California, Los Angeles,
Oh, yeah.
where you had these we had this debate, Sky Shields and Cody Jones had this debate with these logic, or the group's called Logic, and they advocated, in the Katrina catastrophe, that they should start selling water for $20 a bottle because the demand is there, and if they can't afford the $20 a bottle, they should just die. And that's really is this is the sentiment from these guys. So it is it's that type of insanity that is, rampant amongst these drones of Ayn Rand and, Rand Paul and all these lunatics.
Unfortunately, it takes somebody who has a taste for and an experience with production and with what really goes into production to be able to competently stand up to these demagogues. And we're losing that capability. We can't, we that's our precious heritage. People who could understand what's false when a demagogue like this hysterical radio guy yesterday throws at you, well, you're talking about socialism, you're for socialism. If you're not for Hayek, if you're not for the Austrian school, you're for socialism. And from this you get the propaganda started in the late 19th century attacking Lincoln as the big bogeyman of the Austrian School of Economics. They even have this guy, Thomas DiLorenzo, writing a book hilariously misnamed The Real Lincoln. And he's paid by the von Mises Institute of Alabama, the Klan element in Alabama. And this book says that Lincoln is a tyrant, that it was unfair for him to insist on the preserving the Union, and that slavery would have peacefully disappeared if we could have destroyed the country somehow. If the country had been destroyed, then slavery would have just died away on its own. But take up this question of socialism. Socialism is one of the, in its worst forms, I'm not talking about some guy who believes in workers' rights and he's a laboring man and he's got vague ideas about these kind of things and he's for the government to do this and he thinks that's social. I'm talking about the organized movement, especially connected with Karl Marx, coming out of London and their satraps and overlapping with other forms of movements, the Mazzini and so forth. You have to distinguish that, which has no accomplishments whatsoever, from the accomplishments of nations, including nations that are putatively communist, like Russia and China. For example, China when it was in the grip of the most insane form of socialism, namely Maoism, prescribed the takedown of real industry, that each person should make steel in his backyard. You don't need big steel mills. Whereas China as a nation copied the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority. They actually sent people here during World War II to study that. And they went back and eventually did a big a TVA-style dam, which is one of the most precious things done on this planet, the Three Gorges Dam, to control nature and stop flooding and save lives and generate electricity. So in our culture, with the military, for example, as part of our government, and protectionism and government credit and the agriculture department to give science to the farmers, these elements of government, we create success in the economy. Now, there is a difference. There's a fundamental difference between the way America has done this with our Constitution and the way, say, the Soviet Union or China or some other top-down dictatorship might have done things, which is on the question of creativity. We want individuals to be creative, to have a voice, and to be actually independent of the government and of any power controlling them. But that independence requires them to have culture and education. That's why we have public schools, if they're good. Right now they're rotten. Mm-hmm. But the idea, so this is where we differ. For example, you know, somebody who has an empire could also have the power of that empire to build some sort of public works, whether it's a pyramid or something else, or whether it's some sort of collective agriculture or some steel mill or something, and try to use forced labor or minorities or something like that, or Hitler. Hitler built the Autobahn, right? That's a good example, the same kind of thing. Is that an accomplishment? In a sense, it is, but none of these things were invented by Hitler. He made rockets, but they were invented by people in an earlier era.
Yeah.
Science came from an earlier era. So the America's Constitution promotes individual creativity protected by a powerful nation that has a strong central government that runs the credit of the country, not private foreign bankers. That's our elected government. That's our republic. And socialism is a crock. It's a mistake that was foisted on the world by the British and their Austrian and other friends to try to derail the American system.
Yeah, you can't force somebody to be involved in a productive process.
Right.
They actually got to have in themselves the insight to do it. I mean, that's what I realized with this working with these machine tools is like they actually have the insight to improve on an existing technology, that they have the insight to actually create the thought and then put it into real effect. And that you can't control a population that has that sort of mentality, that they're not going to, you know, if you have somebody coming in, you know, trying to confuse them or dissuade them from doing something creative, they're just going to, you know, not reject it. They're not going to be controlled in that way.
Like our engineers and scientists working on NOAPA.
Yeah.
And the same thing, I'm sure you have a sense of this, Alan, with agriculture, because farmers who need to take things into account and make judgments all the time about how to handle livestock or what would be best for crops or what, as opposed to estates and serfdom. I mean, it gets down, it's very clear. By the way,
you can also point to this problem of the states and what is their role. This is more of the demagogue of Rand Paul and his ilk.
Okay.
All right, so here, right now, the states are being destroyed. The bankers demand that all their budgets be destroyed and that they go out of business, that they have no power to sustain the life of the citizens of those states.
Like Chicago.
Our federal system has a definite role for states, and that role is to have those states be aware of, be concerned about, to legislate and take care of those matters pertaining to their specific citizens on a local or regional basis that the federal government just doesn't know about and is not in a position to bureaucratically deal with. So that's the federal system's role for the states. It also allows us to have a state legislature, for example, or a city council that can use its mind when Washington's not using their mind and get thinking going in the country. It's a forum. So here's Rand Paul with the Wall Street and London criminals saying, we're going to destroy the states. He says he's against big government in Washington. Oh, you mean you don't want to have any states? You don't want to have cities and states where people can actually make a decision to have a better life? That's what's going on here. This is pure lies based on the fact that there is a solution to this collapse, and the solution is to go radically in the other direction from where we've traveled since the 1970s, to go back to massive buildup of industry, agriculture, nuclear power, the space program, the huge water projects that will add to our water supply in the United States, and to reverse the entire pessimism, the entire cultural warfare that was poured into our country from people like the Austrian school, the British, and these hippies in aristocratic clothes.
Right. Well, one thing is, let me ask either one of you, Alan, you may have a sense of this, about we had this formal set of lies and evil presented this week in terms of the commission to, what is it called?
The Cat Food Commission.
Thank you.
It's called the Deficit Commission.
Okay. And of course, that's...
Appointed by Obama.
Yeah.
Right. Got a lot of headlines. Obama this morning in his weekly, he might have pre-taped it, interview says, well, I'll wait till December 1st when everything is supposed to be formally presented. But they presented how to cut everything. So, Alan, did you find, you're out and about talking to people a lot. Was that a particular moment of aha or revulsion by a lot of the people you might be organizing to see how insane and evil this all is?
Yeah, I mean, people for the people who have a sense of it or have a sense that this is happening, when you bring it up to people that this is what is being proposed by Obama, I mean, they really get it. I mean, they know that this is, they're just being destroyed. I mean, they live it every day. You have people unemployed for two years upwards, or, you know, people that are just haven't found any work. This is what we're running into a lot, especially in places like Detroit and in the surrounding area, and then also even around here in Chicago. But you just have a bunch of, you know, people are ready, you know, they know that this is happening. And when you bring it up to them, they know that they really get a sense that this is a real life-threatening situation. Now, the thing is that one thing that we're realizing amongst the younger people when you bring this up to them, it's there is this kind of like flight forward denial that they have this kind of there really isn't it is like this fear, underlying fear that's involved with this, but on the surface it's like this trying to ignore the actual crisis itself. But when you do really point it out, look, this is happening now. You know, they're going for massive austerity right now. It's not like further down the line they're going to do it. This is what's happening. Then a lot of them actually become serious and start, you know, becoming more intent on doing something with us, because they know that it is happening, and they know that they're witnessing their friends unemployed. You know, been unemployed for a long time. They just graduated. You know, they should have had a job by now, but they're still unemployed. And so you do have this kind of real, you know, they respond to the factor that you really say this is not happening further down the road. This is happening right now. These guys are going for it immediately.
So if you want to get rid of Obama and have the 25th Amendment invoked, the main thing you can do is to help us to explode Rand Paul right now. Here's Obama's commission, this deficit commission. Alan Simpson, the co-chair, for many months has been deprecating Americans, all Americans, as parasites because they have entitlements. They have Social Security and other things coming to them. And so what they're proposing now is to destroy Social Security. That's Obama's commission. So here comes Rand Paul and says it's not going far enough. They have to destroy people more. Obama's a wimp. I want to really destroy people. Now, last night on this radio program, this hysterical announcer, or, you know, a so-called interviewer, said, well, it's not sustainable. Social Security is not sustainable. I said, well, who says? And you didn't answer that. But no, it isn't sustainable if the economy disappears. If you have no workers who, you know, coming into industry and making a living and producing, you're not going to be able to sustain the elderly population or yourself when you retire. If we lose civilization, if we lose the power to produce, nothing is sustainable. You might as well kill yourself. And I don't recommend that. I recommend getting the power back in our country to have a future, and that is to produce. And that's depends on kicking these guys out, the whole gang of the money power, Obama and Rand Paul. Kick them out.
And let me just, before the show began, someone emailed in about how can the 25th Amendment be activated here, how do you get pressure Biden and so forth. And someone else has sent in from Pennsylvania an email asking particulars about the Austrian school. But on this 25th Amendment, Tony, I think what you just said is the answer to this, right? The activation of people.
Yes, the vice president, the secretary of state, other officers of the government, plus the extended presidency, people in the military, even former military top leaders, intelligence people, diplomats, scientists, who are in and around the presidency, have to confer now, and are conferring now. We know that, but they're nervous about it. We have to steal their spines. You're not going to do that with petitions, or you have to steal their spines. But the issue is that you're going to have to declare Obama unfit for office. He has to be forced out. The 25th Amendment, which was used in part in the past, it was used to put Gerald Ford into the vice presidency as the first unelected vice president or president. And the other clause of it that hasn't been used yet, but which must be now used, this was a 1960s amendment to the Constitution, the clause we need to use is the one that says when the president is unfit for office, the vice president and other officers of the government draw up a bill of particulars to the Congress and to the public, certifying that the president is unfit and needs to be removed for the safety of the country. And this is not something that is going to be the individual decision of Joe Biden. That's crazy. That's not how politics works. You know, people came to, they delegated one person or a group of people to go to Nixon and say, you're out of here or you're going to go to jail. So it's really the same principle. It may not be exactly the same method.
Sure,
he resigned.
Particulars, right.
But we got to kick him out now. And of course, Rand Paul, like the other Republicans, he claims to be at war with the Republican establishment, but their whole thing is we want Obama there so that our end of the banker's bargain can take power next time. Leave him in for two more years. You insane? You want this country to die? That's what they want. That's what the people behind Rand Paul want. Explicitly, they want this particular nation and all powerful nations to die as nations so that they will have unlimited power over mankind.
Well, the timing is now, and Alan, I might ask you to, you can take the last word if you want to, too, about the 25th Amendment. And again, I've asked you often how people in the Great Lakes states and cities where you are, especially in Chicago, which has been home of very good in our American history, not just very bad right now, But on the 25th Amendment and acting, pardon?
Lincoln's Chicago.
That's
not
right.
Hayek's Chicago.
He's everywhere around here. We got statues everywhere.
That's right. So, in other words, people are responding to this. That's our job, and that's what we're doing, right?
Yeah. Well, even amongst the so-called Obama's base in Chicago, the African American population, there's been a huge break with them. The majority of the people that have been signing up downtown have been, African Americans that have realized that Obama is completely not what they voted in. And a lot of them are actually moving with us on this question of the 25th Amendment because they do see it. They see this guy is totally full of himself. They may not know what a malignant narcissist is, but they have an idea that this guy is not at all in their best interest, and they're coming up more and more so than ever, asking us what do we need to do.
Well, I'm glad the time's gone by, and I want to thank you, Alan Agree, who's speaking to us from Chicago, Tony Chaikin here in the studio, and this is the closeout of the LaRue Show, November 13th, 2010. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much.
Thank you.